Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. Today is Monday, November 26th, 2018, and I'm your host, Kara Santa Maria. If you're living in the United States, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. If you are from the United States and you are living abroad, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. If you live in Canada, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was over a month ago now. I hope you got a chance to eat some good food and be grateful for the things you're grateful for and hang out with your family if you like your family and hang out with your friends if you don't like your family. I had a good one and I am really excited to share this week's episode with you. Ugh, it's so exciting. But before I do that, I want to thank those of you who made Talk Nerdy possible this week. Remember, Talk Nerdy is and will always be 100% free to download, and that's because I heavily rely on support from listeners just like you. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/talknerdy, like these good folks did, including Rob Schreck, Pedro M. Rosario Barbosa, Phil T-Bear, The Zombie Drummer, David J. E. Smith, Jeffrey Perez, Charles Payet, Jafe, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Brian Holden, and of course, Jeffrey Sewell. Thank you all so, so very much. All right. You can also support the show by visiting my Talk Nerdy store at talknerdymerch.com. I've got lots of cool stuff that's up right now. You know, t-shirts and mugs and hoodies and hats and books. I've got signed books now, you guys. I've got both the Almanac 2019 and the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe book, as well as the children's book, Charlie and the Tortoise. I am offering signed books at the shelf price of those. So you can visit the store and I will sign one, make it out to whomever you would like. What else? I think that's it for business. Let's get into the fun of this show. Now, guys, you may have heard me talk about my favorite new documentary on the show before. It's called Science Fair. If you haven't seen it yet, I highly, highly recommend it. We're going to talk later on in the show about how you can see it. And I was just so thrilled and so honored to have the chance to talk to the directors, the writers, and the producers of the film, Darren Foster and Christina Constantini. Now, Christina was a science fair kid herself, and she says that this movie really is a love letter to the science fair. It's hilarious. It's really sweet, and it will honestly restore your faith in the future of kind of the globe because the kids in it are just incredible. So without any further ado, here they are, Christina Constantini and Darren Foster. Well, Christina, Darren, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm really excited to catch up on all things Science Fair and to talk about how things are going with the film. But also, first, I just have to like gush for a minute about how amazing this film is. I think deep down in my head, I knew I would already like it. Like, I'm the captive audience. I'm already biased towards the subject matter and knew that, you know, it was near and dear to my heart. What surprised me when I saw the screening was that this is not just a documentary celebrating geeky culture and geeky kids doing smart, science-y things, which I'm always going to love, but it actually was like so fucking funny. Like within the first 30 seconds, you realize the tone of the film is different than you expected. It's really, really funny. So I went to the screening with my boyfriend, who doesn't have any very specific kind of connection to science or science fairs. And after we left, he was like, that was like one of the best documentaries I've seen. Oh, you know, it really touched
your boyfriend
him.
Now.
But really it touched him in a way. We were laughing our asses off the whole time. There were parts where we were like, I'm a little choked up. Oh, and also I have to say right at the top, something that was like a little Easter egg that I loved is that the woman on stage at the science fair, the Intel science fair, who was reading the names of the winners, she was wearing the rainbow dress. That's my best friend, Crystal Dilworth.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
Wait, I almost bought that dress, remember?
From Shanova. Yeah. I actually bought her that dress.
What? That's crazy. We talk about that dress all the time.
That's so funny.
At first I thought it was balloons, and then I was like, oh.
Yeah. No, it's
science.
Smarter than balloons.
Yeah, I have like six of her dresses. They're amazing.
Well, thank her for us because she's amazing.
She's so good, right? And she's been on the show before, so anybody listening has heard Crystal talk. She's actually a big science nerd as well. She has her PhD from Caltech in molecular neuroscience. I'm not sure how much she
competed in science fairs when she was young because she was homeschooled, but definitely it's something that's near and dear to her heart as well. And so first, I heard through the grapevine, Christina, that this project is something that was really personal for you because you yourself were a science fair kid.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I did science fair and I did the International Science Fair, which is the fair in our movie, 2 years during high school, and it totally changed my life and made me who I am and taught me a lot of important skills, but mostly I became obsessed with the world. It's such a funny, joyful, inspiring little world, and Darren and I are actually investigative journalists. I went into journalism and documentary during college, but I had always had this great gratitude to this world that validated me during the dark years of high school. And so I told Darren about this when we were doing a documentary about fentanyl that was very difficult. And he said immediately he got it and was like, that sounds amazing. Let's go scout in 2016 and let's go see if there are any kids that would make a good subject for documentaries. And we got there and there were about 2,000 kids who'd make good subjects for documentaries. It's embarrassment of riches. And Darren and I, have been drawn to investigative reporting, but we also have a sense of humor. And it was really for us an inspiring, it was, a really good break from the serious stuff that we were doing at the time. So we wanted to celebrate these kids. And it's coming out at a time, we started the movie long before Trump was elected, but it's coming at a time when I think it means something a little bit different. And a movie that celebrates science and women and Muslims and immigrants means something different right now. So,
my gosh, yeah, absolutely.
And audiences, I think, have been responding to the joy during these somewhat trying political times.
Yes, I think that's putting it lightly for sure. Darren, did you feel like you were able to use some of those skills that you apply to your investigative work in kind of a new way? Like, do you think that you were capable of making this film, more capable of making this film because of the kind of more deep and, I don't know, serious work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, very different subject matter, obviously. But I think what, was really useful just in our background of doing these sort of current affair TV docs is that we can process information really quickly. And so when it came to, we had a very small team to begin with. And so it was mostly Christina and I and our DP, Pete Alton, in the field. And so a lot of times we were just like making quick decisions on the fly, pivoting very quickly. And I think, sort of having that background, being able to sort of process information and pivot it was like invaluable in this, because oftentimes, we'd be focusing on the character and then they wouldn't qualify at their, at their local qualifying fair. And then we'd have to find somebody else. And, so definitely, yeah. I mean, I definitely think like all the skills that whatever skills we've developed over the years, like, were brought to bear on this project. But the most important one was just like find good characters. And I think we just, like Christina said, it's like the science fair world is just an embarrassment of riches. There's so many amazing kids.
Mm-hmm. But because we're such a small team, we could make these like casting decisions on the fly in a 2 second conversation.
Yeah.
Like we initially thought our movie was going to be all students, but then there was this really amazing teacher named Dr. McCullough from Jericho, New York. And it was basically a 30-second conversation at the fair where we had been looking to follow one of her students for a year. And then basically on the floor at ISEF, Darren, I think you said to me, like, McCullough's our character. And I was like, yes, totally. And because we're such a small team, I think that was and because of our investigative background, those kinds of decisions could be made so quickly. And yeah.
Oh my gosh, she is so loved. Yeah. When she came, I got to go to a screening of the film that was hosted by National Geographic, where a bunch of the kids, a bunch of the characters actually came. And of course, they came out on stage after and people like lost their shit. And Dr. McCullough, when she came out on screen, people were so excited. And there was something really magical for me seeing her, partially because of my sort of upbringing. I was very lucky to grow up unlucky, a lot of baggage related to this, but I did grow up in a town outside of Dallas, Texas. So there were a lot of horrible things growing up in a very, very red state. You know, there are things we talk about a lot on the show, but one of the very good things that came out of the type of upbringing I had was that I was in a school system that actually really focused a lot on development, on gifted and talented programs, and on, you know, kids being able to partake in a lot of these kinds of activities. And I had some Dr. McCulloughs, you know what I mean? I look back and say, oh, that was, you know, Miss Wood or Miss Smart or Miss Silva. Like, I remember those teachers and how they really affected me. Not every student, and actually I don't want to say most, because there are so many incredible teachers out there, but who knows what the real number is of kids who don't have the opportunity to be guided by a teacher who is like so relentless. Because God, she had like no personal life.
Yeah, exactly. She's incredible.
She dedicated everything to these kids. And these were high school kids, right?
Yeah, right.
And she's got a PhD, like, or an EdD. She's, you know, really well educated, incredibly focused and determined. It's like talk about an embarrassment of riches of characters. There's an embarrassment of riches for the kids who are lucky enough to be in her classes.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, the Dr. McCullough is the exception. And I think we wanted to show that. I mean, she has such an amazing program. And she runs her school's research team like most of America runs their football teams, like very high standards, very high stakes, and very high expectations. And her team consistently wins. But we also wanted to show the inverse of that in a character named Kashfia, who's the only Muslim girl in her huge South Dakota football-obsessed high school. And she can't find anybody to sponsor her science fair project. So she ends up in this very unlikely friendship with the head football coach, who knows absolutely nothing about science, but he's just like there to be supportive. And I love him as a model of you know, mentorship. And how you can guide a gifted child without knowing anything about what they're into. And so he's the flip side, you know, of that.
And her as a character was just so compelling. And, you know, it's something sensitive when you want to do an interview about a film that you want people to see, because I don't want to give anything away. But there's something about her as a character that is really unassuming, that is very, she's like a roaring lion sort of inside of a body that you would never, ever, and I don't mean her body actually, but inside of a character that you would never expect to have so much, I don't know, power and excitement and gumption.
Yeah.
Cause she is very unassuming, I think both culturally, but also just blanket personality wise.
Yeah.
That's just the kind of person she is. And so when you're watching, like, the amount of potential and honestly, the amount of actual accomplishment that this young girl has with very little support in her institution is overwhelming. And sometimes when you juxtapose a girl like that against kids who basically have every opportunity and everything, you know, kind of handed to them, and they, you know, these characters didn't exist in your film, but we all have met these characters in life where they still continue to just drop the ball and just not take what they're given to heart. It's I don't know, it's that much more powerful, I think, to see her.
Yeah, I mean, we met Kashfia on a scouting trip in 2016, and I don't know, we just really fell in love with her, and we saw something in her. She's very quiet, she's very unassuming, she's very shy. But when we were talking to her, there was just something that, you know, I don't think we could articulate at the time. And then, like, much later, Coach Schmidt articulated, he said exactly what you said, is like, inside there's a lion. She is. So I don't know, like I think when we were casting her, you know, we saw something in her. We weren't sure what it was, but the moment she told us that her mentor was the head football coach, that was the moment we decided, like, let's book the tickets to Brookings and cover her story. And it was great because she winds up being the sort of emotional core of the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's a wonderful, wonderful person doing amazing things.
But she's like, you know, like this tiny hijabi girl who is going to this Midwestern high school full of huge white football players. So she definitely, like, doesn't doesn't fit in. But Science Fair, what I also love about her story as a former Science Fair kid is Science Fair is where she finds her place. And that's very much it was the case for me. It was like where I found my tribe. I'm from Wisconsin and also sports obsessed high school. But there are other kids in our movie for whom like Science Fair is that place. It's where they finally fit in. And they're, you know, Robbie from West Virginia, all of these kids, Science Fair means something different to them, but it is very formative for all of them, as it was for me.
Absolutely. I mean, there's something too about, and I want to get to Robbie soon because he's much loved, but there's something too about coming back to Kashfiya, this idea that when you're making a documentary film, you are telling stories that are unfolding in front of you. And the skill and the artistry of being a documentary filmmaker is couching those stories. It's making sure that you draw out the things that are salient to you. You maybe don't cover the things that would get lost in the weeds. And it's a lot to figure out how to paint a picture of reality in a compelling narrative way. But the cool thing is you don't have to invent these characters. No. They exist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whereas we live in a time where I think people are more sort of politically divided overtly than they have been historically, even this morning I was like, avowed for the 50 millionth time to get off of Twitter because there were so many trolls, and noticing all these people who are like the anti-SJW people and the people who are, you know, kind of really getting down on anybody with a sort of liberal or progressive agenda, pro-immigrant agenda, whatever the case may be. What I love about Kashfiya's story is that it embodies why people care about this narrative. Right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's impossible to watch your film and maintain, I would assume, an overwhelmingly anti-immigrant perspective unless you have just the amount of like compartmentalization and confirmation bias with capabilities to say, oh, but she's the exception to the rule. Right. Because the truth of the matter is you didn't invent her as a character. She's a real person in life who's representative of so many other incredible people. You know, she's not a caricature.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't do a story about Science Fair, and you can't do a story about science in America without acknowledging the contribution of immigrants. I mean, or without acknowledging the contribution of women. I mean, these are all things that are very organic to the story that we were telling. So yes, Kashfiya is an amazing story in her own right, but she's representative of so many people, that have contributed so greatly to science. And I think, you know, we used to tell ourselves as a nation that we are a melting pot. You know, we open our doors to people, and we want the best and the brightest to come here. And it's only like in the fairly recent years that that's become, you know, something that we look down upon or something that we say we don't want, which is like shooting ourselves in the foot. Like, why would we, you know, talk this way when the history of our country and all the innovation and the progress that we've made as a country has been on the backs of people who have come from, you know, distant shores. That's who we are. So.
And I love that in the film, in some ways, you made so much more work for yourself than you probably could have otherwise, but it's really what makes the film. It's one of the several things that makes the film so wonderful is that you didn't say, oh, we're just going to follow one school or, oh, we're just going to follow one region. You went everywhere. So you have these clusters of kids from different schools. Sometimes you followed multiple kids within an institution. Sometimes it was literally just one kid like Kashfiya, mostly because she's like the only kid in her school who's competing in the science fair. Yeah. Right. And still nobody knows who she is. It's so frustrating.
It's crazy.
But then you even follow kids that aren't from within America because this is an international science fair. Yeah. So that was a lot of work for yourselves. I'm wondering about the logistics. You said you were a small team, at least at the beginning, just the two of you and your DP, which is director of photography, the person with the camera, but also who does a lot of decision making and making the shots really beautiful.
Especially in our case. Yeah.
But so were there times when your DP was alone in the field? Did you guys split up very often? Like, how did you logistically handle that?
Yeah, it was the casting process was probably the hardest puzzle to crack. But I think, you know, we wanted to show the range of kids that participate in the fair, and that's powerhouse schools, underdogs, international powerhouses, yeah, international underdogs. And so we wanted to really show that range. And in order to do that, we had to make a lot of phone calls, a lot of Skype calls. And, you know, I think it helped that I was a former science fair kid. I, like, know how the system works. I know who wins all the time. I know the teams. I think, you know, in the 2016 fair, Darren saw what I have long known, which is that the Brazilians are the loudest team and the most fun team. And their energy is amazing at the science fair. So I think we were drawn to that. And then once we learned that there were these kids from this very poor remote town who are competing with the Zika project.
Yeah, working on something that's so, like, close to home.
Exactly. They were from the region of Brazil that was hardest hit by the Zika virus, and they had taken it on themselves with just one laptop and a very rudimentary lab to try to research this problem, which is incredible. And so we knew we wanted to do this Brazilian team. But that team, you know, it was different. Sometimes it was just myself and Pete, or you and Pete, but it was two or three people throughout that whole process. And we traveled around the world. And, you know, there are places we went that you don't see, but that didn't make the cut either because the kids didn't qualify, or in some cases, the kids were teenagers who had become seniors and promised us that they were doing their science fair projects. And then we showed up to Louisville, Kentucky, and Mukund Venkatakrishna did not do his science fair project. So he actually had designed a science fair project that was not successful because the fatal flaw, it was a fingerprint recognition software, and the fatal flaw was it kept identifying bald men in pictures as thumbs, which is amazing to
you. Love that computer vision, those really simple mistakes that, oh, it's like that Silicon Valley episode with the hot dog recognition.
Exactly.
So good. Yeah. That's too funny.
But so sometimes kids disqualified themselves from a project.
But that's also
a few very cool ones who were still mad at Kalyani. You too.
That's also so good though, because it reminds you of, like, when I was getting my master's degree, I was in a neuroscience lab where we were doing primary cell culture. So we would dissect out fetal tissue from brain tissue from fetal mice, and then we would dissociate them and lay them down on these little glass plates that had microelectrodes inside of them, and we could record their electrical activity. And I was really into brain damage because I was always been really into psychology. Ultimately, I'm getting my psych degree now, and so I would work with my professor. How can we induce brain damage in these things? We'll figure it out. We'll make an in vitro model for brain damage, and I'll do my thesis on this, and it'll be great. And for the first year of my degree, I tried to induce brain damage in these damn things, and I would, like, hit the plates, and they would crack, and they would break, and the cells were totally resilient, and they never would die. And we realized after, you know, months and months and months that, like, it wasn't a viable project. But that's science.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that happens actually in the lab when you're getting paid to be a real working scientist.
Definitely.
So it's so cool to see that some of these kids, even though they feel early on like intense failures,
right,
that they actually may be more resilient if and when they decide to become academic scientists than some of the kids for whom they always win, it always works out, they always make the A+.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that can actually be, I think, a recipe for difficulty when they get to college. And there were a couple characters who I worried about.
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to be able to handle college the first time they get a C on a paper or something like that?
I don't think any of them are ever going to get a C.
No.
except for Robbie.
Oh, I have to admit, was like, he was the star. Like, other than Dr. McCullough, at that screening, there were, like, crowds of people, dozens deep,
mobbing,
surrounding him. Oh, my
Robbie.
God. Yeah,
know,
he's a rock
amazing.
Star. He's a
amazing.
Rock star.
I think science fair is great because it teaches kids how to fail, and that failure is part of the process of success, just like science does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is been a super important lesson for me. Having done science fair, I failed a lot during that process.
Yeah.
And as a filmmaker, especially as a documentary filmmaker, you have to be able to fail, and you have to be able to make a lot of bets that don't pay off. And there were a lot of moments during the production of our movie where we felt like we were failing or could fail.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, like, we also didn't know what the end product was, right? I mean, like, we have a 9 characters that we follow, but we didn't know like what the final number was going to be until we started putting it together. So like Christina was saying, like we followed a dozen to 15 kids throughout this whole process. But at the end, it was, you know, we didn't know what the mix was going to be. And yeah, it was only in putting it together that we realized, like, okay, this is the best mix, this is the best order. You know, we tried it at one point with one more kid and it was just like one too many. So, you know, you don't really know. And that's, the fun of documentary is that you don't really know where you're going a lot of the times and you just kind of figure it out along the way.
There's so much algorithmically that you have to juggle because there's only so much back engineering you can do, right? Once you know who wins in certain categories, you can sort of pull those storylines out if you were lucky enough to be filming them,
right. Yeah.
Out of thousands of kids. But also, you know, certain stories are going to go to different places and your job is to make there be some sort of rhyme or reason to that.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, just like having the prescience, I don't know, the foresight to know what and how many characters can a human mind follow in a film, right? Like you said, one too many. At a certain point,
ten.
You might go,
ten.
It's 10, you know.
It's 10. Yeah, we might have had too many. Some might say we've
so. I don't think so. I think that you had a really good balance because even if I couldn't remember all of their names during the film, mm-hmm. I definitely remembered these core features. You also chose people who juxtaposed against one another were really, really unique.
Right.
I have to say, so two of my favorite characters, it's hard to pick favorite characters because I think Kashfia was a fan favorite, obviously. I think Dr. McCullough was a fan favorite. There was also the girl who was sort of like the equal and opposite of Kashfia. She was sitting right next to me during the screening.
Anjali.
Anjali. Yeah. Yes. It was like that fine line between some people thinking that maybe she was like a narcissist and other people being like, no, she has very healthy self-esteem.
Right.
I wish that my daughter had self-esteem like that at her age. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's really what I saw in her.
Yeah, I mean, she says in the film, and I think it's a valid point, that if she was a boy, you know, like the worst she may be called is cocky, which is like, you know,
yeah.
a nice way of saying you're confident.
Exactly.
Or a weird way of saying you're confident.
Yeah.
Not nice.
A harsh way of saying it.
Yeah, but I mean, for a boy, it's like, you know, like that's not like a real put down calling somebody cocky. You know, like, yeah. But there's no equivalent for a girl. You don't call girls cocky. Like, it's not just a thing. It's just not a thing. You know?
Yeah. And people really do like find her grating. And I'm sure to her face, she's been told a million times that she's too pushy. She's too this, she's too that. When you're right, it's like there's a sexist overtone to that simply because, you know, people don't expect it from a girl to be like, I'm good at science.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you guys how good I am at this.
And she is good.
And she is good.
Really
exactly.
Good.
Like, and you see how creatively good she is throughout the film, which I love.
She's amazing. I mean, she got a perfect score on her ACT when she was in middle school, and she's 2 years younger than everybody else in her grade. So she's truly like a brilliant child, and she knows it. And I think we like to celebrate cocky girls. I mean, she's like a different energy than what you see usually celebrated in movies.
Yeah.
I love her.
And she's also so like woke in a cool way. Like like I said, she was sitting next to me during the screening and she was literally on Instagram the entire screening. You know, she was like very dialed into like youth culture and liking different pictures and stuff.
That's
and
so
like
funny.
Whispering to her friend who she was sitting. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. Love her.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she's also, you know, like, you know, she's obviously very smart and very gifted and brilliant. But she's also like very savvy. I mean, for, you know, a 14-year-old to have really figured out the science fair system, that's not just science, it's also the presentation. I mean, she
and politics
and the politics of it. She understands, you know, that world in a way that, you know, many of her peers haven't figured out yet. So she's wonderful.
Well, I'll work for her someday.
For sure. Yeah. And I think a few kind of sexist, racist assholes will really bemoan that they're working for her, you know, because she definitely embodies I'm just going to take my skill set and run with it. And I'm not going to be apologetic because I can't wait for you guys to catch up with me, which I just love about her.
Exactly.
So there are two characters that I think part of the reason that they are also fan favorites is because they bring so much humor to the film.
Right.
Are Robbie and the kid who listens to trap music. What's
Harsha.
His name?
Harsha.
Harsha.
Yeah.
I love him so much.
They're incredible. Yeah, both of them are. I mean, what we really wanted to show that, you know, these kids are brilliant. They're doing amazing research. they will continue to do amazing things. But at the end of the day, they are teenagers and they have complex personalities and they listen to trap music and they have their, like, you know, teenage senses of style and, you know, the teenage nerd stereotype is really more complex than it might have been portrayed for decades.
Oh yeah. I think that, like, being a nerd is, I don't know, I often reference this movie, which I think is a silly reference, but it speaks to me deeply. Did you guys see the remake of 21 Jump Street?
No.
Okay, so it's like Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it.
I have.
I know, it's like
Chris. Stuck with you, really stuck with you.
But the funny thing is, so they're cops who are going to back to school, and they're like undercover, and they get their identities, and they decide to like switch them, because like they're, no, I was a nerd in high school, I want to be the cool guy or whatever. Or maybe they just fulfill whatever these identities are, but you see that culture has changed in such a way that the guy driving the hot rod that's putting out all these emissions, taking up two parking spaces and being super bro-y, everybody at school is like scoffing at him.
That guy lives in Silicon Valley now.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy with the Prius who's like really mindful and does his homework, everybody's like, he's so cool.
He's so cool. Right.
And that's the thing, that there is...
Flipped.
It hasn't completely flipped, but there is a new, I mean, there's a reason my podcast is called Talk Nerdy, and I say that with a point of pride.
Right.
Like, being a nerd,
we're
taking totally it back.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, especially in this day and age of, like, you know, the leaders in the world knowing nothing, I think being smart and being an expert is not a bad thing. Right.
And there's something about Robbie particularly that resonates with people, because he has this sort of, I don't know if move fast and break things, Facebook mentality is the best way to put it, because I know there's a lot of backlash around that right now. There's a lot of good coverage of why that's maybe not the safest motto for a large corporation like Facebook. But there's this mentality to Robbie's character that's very wise beyond his years.
Brilliant.
Like, he's not playing the game. He doesn't care about the game. And he's just got this real composure that, like, you know, he's going to run a Fortune 500 company when he's like 22.
Yeah. I mean, I think what people respond to in Robbie is that he's just like so authentically Robbie. I mean, he's like a true original. I mean, I think what fascinated us about him is that, you know, like, I could literally listen to him talk because he's just got a unique perspective on everything. And he's hilarious. He's very funny, but it comes from just like his own unique perspective on
everything. Yeah, like,
he's
not trying.
No, he's not trying. He's not trying to be anything but Robbie. And I think people really respond to that because it's authentic, you know, from his style to like how he uses his brain. And I think, you know, he's typical of a kid that doesn't fit into the traditional like curriculum, especially these days when it's just so rote and like, you know, teach to the test, you know, that is not going to stimulate him. And he's like got his own curiosity. And I think we all would love to just be able to pursue like our own curiosity in the way that Robbie does. And like, obviously he's taken it to amazing places.
And wasn't he, I mean, isn't he like barely passing all of his classes when you guys are filming him?
So when we met him, he was failing out of math. And but he
so
was
funny.
We met him in 2016 at the science fair. He was competing in the math category with a prime number theory project that he won awards from the NSA and like all these other people for this amazing the Ulam spiral. It was a prime number theory project, but was failing out of math because the educational system just wasn't speaking to him.
Yeah.
And he went to his math teacher, Mrs. Myers, and asked her if what she knew about number theory, and she said, Robbie, why don't you just focus on today's assignment, which was just like some very boring algebra problem. And so he just, you know, didn't do his homework, he didn't really care, and it was because the one-size-fits-all teaching system didn't serve him.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, you know, that I love about science fair. This is really a love letter to science fair, if you can't tell. But but that's another thing. Science fair allows these kids who are not being served by their school systems to explore and have this, like, self-guided approach to education, which I think is, in my opinion, the best approach to education is kids exploring their curiosities on their own.
All right, guys, I want to take a quick break to thank the sponsors of this week's episode, starting with Adagio. And if you are like me, you are a serious classical music fan. And don't get me wrong, I do sometimes love to listen to my local classical radio station, but most of the time, I want to listen to a specific piece of music. And I'm talking a specific composer, a specific chorus or orchestra, and maybe even sometimes a very specific recording. And the only place I've ever found that I can get that kind of specificity is Adagio. They solve the problems of finding the right recording because they offer the best search designed for classical music. And they have high quality streams as well. My favorite is that you can also like learn about new music, which I think is pretty important for classical fans. They've got exclusive content. They've got hard to find pieces, and they have a mood player that helps you find just the right piece for a certain occasion. They've got tons of different playlists, like the Composer's Essentials playlist, which includes Vivaldi and Chopin and Debussy. They've also got slow piano. They've got Stay Focused, Pure Relaxation, Come Heavy Sleep, and Choral Meditation. I love them all, and I know that you guys will too. So what are you waiting for? Try Adagio free for 14 days, and then you only pay $9.99 per month when you subscribe. So go to podcast.adagio.com/nerdy. Again, that's podcast.adagio, IDAGIO.com/nerdy for your 14-day free trial. I also want to thank Pimsleur for their support of Talk Nerdy. Pimsleur is the conversational method for learning a new language, and it was developed by Dr. Pimsleur of UCLA and Ohio State. He's an applied linguist and professor, and this method is specifically focused on conversational skills. It's not a language game app. You actually learn by conversing and training your ears to understand native speakers, which of course is the hardest part, but it's the part that we actually need when we're learning a new language. It's incredible. Pimsleur helps you reach an intermediate level in just 30 days. And of course, that's not the end of the language learning journey, but it's pretty cool that within 30 days, you can be an intermediate speaker. 75% of Pimsleur customers actually learn a new language on the go, because you don't have to sit down in front of a computer to do the method. It's totally proven to work for you. It's been used by, gosh, everybody, like the Marine Corps, the State Department, Homeland Security, the FBI, the Navy, diplomats, journalists, aid workers, people all over the world. So don't just take my word for it. You can try the full course absolutely free for 7 days. That's risk-free. And you've got nothing to lose by trying, but you have everything to gain: a new language, a new perspective, and a better understanding of other cultures. Guys, don't wait. Go to pimspeaks.com/nerdy right now. That's pimspeaks.com/nerdy to try the full course absolutely free for 7 days risk-free. Once again, that's pimspeaks.com/nerdy. All right, guys, let's get back to the show.
It makes you wonder how many kids would have fallen through the cracks without Science Fair, like in the other direction of what we usually think of when we think of kids falling through the cracks. Right. You know, obviously there's so many, it's a tragedy how many children throughout our country fall through the cracks simply because they're not elevated or motivated or empowered to find their voice. They live in communities where academics are not, you know, reinforced, and they go to schools that, you know, are overburdened, and it's just very sad how many kids don't end up graduating, and, you know, their potential isn't fulfilled. On the flip side of that, you have these kids who have some opportunity, basic opportunity, which is great. But again, they're so, I don't know, like gifted.
Yeah.
That they, the academic systems just can't hold them up.
Right.
And they fall through the cracks the other way. They fail out of school.
Right.
Which is bananas.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Robbie's a little bit of a spoiler alert, but he couldn't get into any colleges. He'd, you know, won his state science fair 2 years in a row with incredible research, but couldn't get into college because
grades are bad.
Because his grades are bad, because his huge public high school wasn't really serving him.
Yeah, and he just like formulaically doesn't look good on paper. But right. The second you talk to him, you're like, I want you to like run my math department.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, it says a lot about, you know, the education system, but also higher education. If a kid like Robbie isn't embraced by like our best institutions, then like something is wrong.
It also makes you think that he was so bad on paper that he couldn't even get an interview.
That's because we haven't looked at his
his transcripts. Yeah.
Exactly. And maybe he just like cannot write to save his life, because it seems like if he had written an essay that even remotely captured who he is, that like Stanford or somebody would be like, let's like have a conversation.
It's interesting that you say Stanford, because he's actually working in a research lab at Stanford right now, guest lecturing at Stanford. TAing at Stanford, but can't get in.
Yeah, because the basic requirements, he's probably not capable of fulfilling them. Yeah. And that is to me what's so kind of funny, endearing, you know, ironic, but also frustrating about Robbie's character, is that he really does break the mold. And so I'm saying Robbie's character. Robbie, if you're listening, I know you're a real human being. I apologize. But it is. It's hard to see, but it's also really exciting. And I have to say, sort of from a psychotherapeutic perspective, his parents are just amazing. When you watch them, because they're very Midwestern, right? Like, where's he from again?
He's from West Virginia.
Okay, so not even like more southern. Yeah, that kind
Shenandoah
of like
Shenandoah Junction. It's like sort of 2 right hours on the, from Washington D.C.
Yeah, so it's this very interesting kind of, and they're like, we don't really get it, but we love him and we support it, and that's such a cool kind of pure. Yeah. Supportive way to be, that like Robbie beats to his own drum and we don't get it, but we're happy to have him. Right. I'm like, oh my God, I love his parents so much.
I love his parents. I mean, you know, his mom and dad are really wonderful people. And you're right. I mean, that's exactly it. They, you know, they realized they had a son with, you know, really, a really special kid in many ways. And instead of trying to, you know, conform him to the system, you know, they let him just sort of do his thing and run wild. You know, they let him have the entire attic to build his computers as he was growing up. His mom drove him to the junkyard, the recycling center, to, you know, pick apart computers for parts. And I think that's just wonderful. Like, you know, just support your kids in whatever they're passionate about, and like not try to, you know, push them in directions that they don't want to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it also goes to show that like you don't have to get it.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's okay if your kid has a unique interest that like, you know, you always wished your kid was going to be a star baseball player, and it turns out they're just really into bugs. Yeah. And you're like, but bugs gross me out and I don't want to have anything to do with bugs. Like, empower your kid to play with bugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's so important to be able to do that. And like, I don't know, it's just a really beautiful story there. And I noticed, or at least kind of, I assumed that there was something special about his parents, maybe compared to some of the other parents, only because only some parents are featured or highlighted in the film. And obviously there's a plethora of reasons, or there could be behind that.
Yeah. We really loved Robbie's mom in particular. I think she, from the very beginning, you know, she wouldn't let him play video games unless he wrote them himself. And I think that kind of approach has led him to where he is.
That is so funny.
But there are other parents who are more like, you know, here is the traditional path. Here is, you know, excelling in science fair is good because it will help you get into college kind of parenting. But I think it's been an interesting few years because we've seen so many different models of what parenting looks like. And Darren's a parent, so I'm sure he's learned more about this than I have.
To like literally the most adorable kid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Your kid is so stylish. I follow you and your wife's Instagram, and he just cracks me up all the time.
He's he's like a bit like Robbie, but in theater, I would say. He's like, you know, he's very theatrical, and I'm not theatrical at all, you know, and so like, I definitely like took lessons. I think we asked like every parent, like, so what's the secret? Like, how do you, you know, raise a genius? And you know, I think the parents that I think we really, you know, were drawn to were the ones that, you know, definitely were a little bit more like, you know, free range parenting, like let your kids pursue their passions and encourage them and support them. And even if you're right, even if you don't understand exactly what they're into, just be there, support them, you know, drive them to the recycling center so they could pick apart computers or, my favorite part is like, I think the most structure that Robbie may have had was the fact that he had to wear a collared shirt. And even that he hacked, you know, like he figured out a way to hack it, you know, so.
He wears Hawaiian shirts.
It's so good. Like all the time.
Only Hawaiian shirts.
He's like, it's the most sophisticated I could look and still be totally comfortable.
He's amazing.
Oh my God, he's so good. So we didn't talk much about Harsha. Mm-hmm. Harsha was one of the only kids who I don't think was at the screening.
Yeah.
Which made me super sad. Is that because he was actively working on his schoolwork?
Yeah, he had exactly. He apologized. He said he had a prior engagement, which I assume means he's doing something super important. Because for most teenagers, I think flying to LA to hang out with their friends would be the most important engagement, but he's got a lot of these kids are like really onto their own next lives. Like they're way past this movie. Really? Yeah. I mean,
Evo's building airplanes and flying airplanes.
That's really
Robbie
cool.
Robbie is having art shows in Paris. And like, Robbie's famous. At this point, Robbie's famous.
So. Oh, yeah. He was like on the cover of
Bloomberg Business Week.
That's bananas. And and not having anything to do with the film.
No, sometimes we're
can't
like,
take any credit for that.
We're like, Robbie, can you mention our little movie?
That's so funny.
Like, he's been in the New York Times and the Washington Post. He's like all over.
That's hilarious. But Harsha, I think part of the reason that Harsha resonated with me too is he was in one of the opening scenes of the film, right? Mm-hmm. There was something, he set the tone in my mind for like, oh, this is not your typical like celebrating nerds movie, because this really like low key, you know, barely, it's like literally listening to intense trap music in like one of the opening scenes, and you're like, that's so funny. And his friends are trying to describe his personality, and you're like, what? But then you see his personality and you're like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
No, we love Harsha. I mean, he's very like buttoned up. He like literally every button is always buttoned, but he's a teenager who has this like real passion for trap music. He says in the movie, he says trap music and classical music. Okay, well, actually just mostly trap music. Just like admitting who he really actually is.
Yeah.
So good.
I mean, I think all the characters, like, you know, what ultimately why we decided to pick the cast that we have is because they all have like a surprising twist about them. And like, that's actually what drew us to them as characters. Like, you know, they may present one way, but then you realize, like, oh, they have these like totally other lives that are going on, and they're all complicated in ways that are so interesting. And so a lot of the film was like, trying to break with stereotypes of what a science fair kid was, and letting the kids be who they are and not try to sort of conform them to this idea of like, oh, they're all geniuses doing amazing work. It's like, yes, that's part of it. But the other part of it is that the, you know, well-rounded, three-dimensional, you know, people with interests that are outside of science.
Which, I think that's probably, honestly, the most responsible and the thing about the film that touches me the most is that these kids are described and presented as human beings, like real people that are well-rounded. They're not a stereotype of what a science fair kid would be. So I like, you know, I think this is the part in the conversation where I'm, Darren, I'm interested in your perspective too, I promise, where I would love to know a little bit about some personal stories about Science Fair and how they sort of translate. Because one thing that, you know, almost makes me beg for a part two or like some sort of a follow up in a couple of years is that, you know, the film ends after the science fair and there's a little bit of kind of like what happens next. But the thing is, I want to know where these kids end up in like, quote unquote, in life as far as, you know, we can define that. So I think back to Science Fair and I never competed in INSEF. So INSEF is the
ISEF.
SF, sorry.
ISEF.
Jesus. The International Science and Engineering Fair, which in this film was sponsored by Intel. For the past several years has been sponsored by Intel, but not always.
Right. Well, now I think it's been something like 15 years and they've just announced that their sponsorship is over. And I don't think they've found a new sponsor at this point.
So here's like a call to action for anybody who's listening, because of course it would be so devastating if ISEF actually folded because they didn't have the sponsor that they needed.
Right.
So let's hope that another really big corporation or big foundation can kind of pick that up, because I assume it's not cheap.
No, but so if any of you have a few million lying around.
Exactly. Somebody listening to this podcast is a millionaire, right? I would totally
feel the effects
of it. You want
to be responsible for 500 patents coming out every year.
Yeah, those 500 patents came out of the fair that we covered. I mean, it's like real science.
Wait, just actively out of, not like 20 years later, but actively out of
that one fair. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's bananas.
Yeah.
So I think back to my science fair days and they were like more regional. So I competed in science fair and also something that we called history fair from the time I was in about fifth grade until about, I think, ninth or 10th grade. And I did the best in like I think 7th, 8th grade is when I won. I think like the highest we got is that we won like our whole state in a biology division. And that was really exciting for me. I think I won like $50. Ooh. Yeah. And it was like, whoa, high roller. I remember doing it with my friend Ashley Reed. I have old pictures. We were in the newspaper. Yeah. It was very exciting. You competed in an international science fair. How many times? Twice, you said?
Yeah.
So how old were you? Or what grade were you?
I was 14. I was a freshman and a sophomore.
Freshman and sophomore. So you had probably, though, been doing a lot of science and kind of understood what the scientific method was and how to use it from the time you were younger.
Right. So I did the middle school science fair in 7th and 8th grade. And then my freshman year, I competed at my school and then my regional fair, and I made it to the state fair. And as a 14-year-old, I won state, and it was crazy. I was in behavioral science. I did a project about peer pressure and conformity.
Nice.
I measured individual susceptibility to peer pressure in teenagers. It was very manipulative. And it was flagged by the SRC like the boys are in the movie.
Yeah, it's very Milgram of you.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, believe me. All of my idols were like post World War II, like social scientists like Salomon Ash and like all of that stuff. That was like my, I would go home and read their stuff and be like, brilliant,
exactly.
Brilliant geniuses, Zimbardo. Sorry, my stomach is really growling.
That's okay. I don't think we picked it up, okay, but if we did, that's quite charming.
sorry. And yeah, so, you know, I did this. There was a joy in the creation of an experiment and learning that scientific process. And I think it's really good for kids to go through like that mental exercise of what is an experiment? How do you design an experiment? How do you design the perfect experiment? How do you control for variables? What is, you know, what does that mean? And it was a really fun puzzle to figure out as a kid. And then being validated and rewarded as a young girl, I think was really important, and validated and rewarded for your ideas rather than other things.
Yeah.
For me was super important. And these kids, a lot of science fair kids go on to do amazing things in fields that are unrelated to science. I mean, there were like dozens of the 30 under 30 kids in the past few years have been former ICEF kids. Like, we're all over the place. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez placed second at ICEF. Like, kids from ICEF, I think, learn important skills young that end up translating into important skills as adults. So I always believe like whether or not kids go into science fair can be very important for building that confidence and building all these mental skills very early.
Oh yeah, I think you and I are really aligned in the idea that if you learn the scientific method early, basically what you're learning is critical thinking, you're learning skepticism, you're learning evidence-based thought, like all of those things serve you in every single field. And you're learning a bit about philosophy as well, which I don't think that academically we reinforce early enough. It's kind of like there are two things that I think that we really F up in our academic system is that we don't teach kids languages early enough in America. Mm-hmm. It's weird. Almost every other country, they start really young. Here, it's like you take your first foreign language class in 7th grade.
Like right when you're finishing, your brain is like too old to start.
Yeah, it's so weird. But also, we don't really do enough core curriculum critical thinking skills training, right? So the cool thing is it's sort of built into science, which is why I'm so drawn to it. It's much more than science, right? It's skepticism. It's fluid thinking. It's all of these things. So you said that you competed when you were in 9th and 10th grade, right? Do you feel like your life is different now because you competed? Like, do you feel like there were doors that were open for you? You have perspective shifts?
Yeah. I mean, I think just at like on a very base level, I placed at ICEF, and that allowed me to get into a college that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to get into. And that, you know, changed my life. But as you're saying, all of these critical thinking skills, presentation skills, I think a very important skill for me is that young science fair kids have to learn is how do you take something very complicated and break it down and present it in ways that humans understand, which you do constantly. But when you're an investigative journalist, that's a super important skill. Like, how do you take this thing that's super, super complicated and make it watchable and make it, interesting and relate it to people's lives. And I think that that is probably the most important skill I've learned from science fair. But yeah, it's changed who I am, and I'm so grateful to the world. And so that's why this love letter exists, I guess.
I have to say, it makes me so happy that your experience during like hard social science within the science fair, ultimately your biggest takeaway is that it improved your storytelling capability. Yeah. It's so cool. Like, yeah. And it again, just reinforces what you said earlier, that if you're into science fair, it doesn't mean you have to become a scientist.
Right.
It's going to serve you in a bunch of different fields. I also love that it sort of busts these myths around there being like right brain people and left brain people, or that girls are better at linguistics and boys are better at, you know, physics and math. Like it's all bullshit and it's all mixed together.
Yeah.
And all those skills serve one another. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really cool thing about it. Darren, obviously, you know, we've talked a lot to Christina about her love letter to science fair. Did you have any, you know, involvement when you were young in science fair?
So, I mean, I was definitely like more in like the baking soda volcano kind of science fair.
Yeah.
But I was a huge science kid. I mean, I went to college thinking I was going to be a doctor. I was a bio major.
Oh, cool.
And so I studied science all my life until after my senior year in college. I started transitioning in college to more doing ecology and stuff like that. I sort of left pre-med behind and started doing more ecology, and I was really into environmental sciences. But then I think through that whole process, then I started getting really into like journalism and storytelling. And I see the same connection too. I mean, like it's the background of science definitely prepared me for, you know, storytelling. I mean, it's just, I see it go hand in hand, especially as a journalist where you have to sort of like think critically all the time, you know, search for what's, you know, facts and what's true and what's evidence. And, you know, so, I mean, I find the lessons that I learned, you know, doing science, I use it every day, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, just that crossover is like, it's so obvious, I think, to those of us who have dipped our toe in both worlds. Mm-hmm. But it, for whatever reason, the dogma is that these are two completely separate lanes. And they're just, I know, they're just like, they're not.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to hear you sort of reinforce that.
Yeah.
Okay, so, gosh, there's so much more that we could talk about, but I'm really interested in, because mostly you guys just have to watch the movie. Like at this point, like what else can we tell you? I don't want to give away any more plot lines. What else can we tell you? But I want to know what you guys are into next, because you mentioned that you met or that you worked together on a fentanyl documentary, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, by the way, just random aside, I just covered on SGU last week the new fentanyl, pill that you put under your tongue. Yeah, I can't remember what it was called, like Dysuvia or something
that was
like that.
Just approved by the FDA.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean,
like,
gosh.
We need more opiates right now.
I know. Now I'm thinking of like your take on that after you've done so much work on the kind of the dark side of it. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's a very difficult topic to be covering. And is that the kind of work that you're now diving back into? Like where's your attention now?
I mean, I think the other thing that has been serving us really well is that we don't really have good attention spans.
We're
all over the map. I mean, definitely, like, you know, I think we're pursuing, this is the sort of thing that we're dealing with right now, is just trying to figure out like what we're going to do next. But definitely, you know, I think we still love investigative journalism, and you know, we'll probably do stuff more in that space. The opioid epidemic is something, you know, I've been covering for a long time, and I do actually have like a story in that space that I'm looking to do. But, you know, also I think like science fair opened up a whole different world for us, because, you know, we weren't the sort of people that you would naturally think would do a science fair documentary based on our past, you know, work, especially a lighthearted and fun documentary.
Yeah.
If somebody would have said that, like, our documentary would call the funniest movie of the year, like, you know, like,
Years ago. Yeah,
that would have been a weird thing. So, but it, like, you know, definitely like this idea of using humor and just, exploring like really quirky characters is something that I think we're both really interested in, and looking at these sort of subcultures and different worlds.
I also think, you know, like, we live during a time when so many of our adults are acting like children.
Oh, yeah.
And doing a movie about children who are acting like adults and who are really showing us, you know, what's true and what's real and what's important. I think that idea has made us think more about what other kinds of topics in this area. We did a short on the Parkland kids that should be premiering at some festival soon. Who knows when? But that idea too of like, let's talk about the kids who are doing the cool things right now when this world is so crazy.
Oh yeah.
So I think kids is also some in the equation. But yeah, there are a few projects. Nothing that we like really can really talk about at the.
We're not going to break any news on Karis.
But I do love though that this sort of, like you said, lighthearted, funny, kind of whimsical and endearing documentary has sort of opened up a new world of filmmaking to you that the same as these kids who did a science fair project and did really well and then were able to say, oh, maybe I would be a good journalist or maybe I would be a good, you know, whatever, CEO. It's cool to see that when you try your hand at something and you apply those skills in a new way that it's like, oh shit, now I can do way more things than I thought I could do before. I love to hear that.
It's funny because like, you know, now people are approaching us with like all these like
kids movies
and like funny movies and we're like,
we're trying not to be typecast. We're trying to go in all these other directions now,
but do love documentary. You love telling real human stories.
Definitely.
And there's something, you know, I think probably the number one, like, what do you call it? Like blurb. They're not called blurbs on movies. Are they still called blurbs?
Blurb.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Like the number one review, the line that you keep hearing is that like this film restores our faith in humanity, right? Probably like so many people have said that. And as much as it sounds really cliche, there's a reason that that's echoed over and over and over. So I love the idea, like you said, of telling stories of people who we sometimes forget. They fade into the background when all the news is Trump all the time and devastating wildfires and, you know, Armistice Day and Trump embarrassing himself in front of the global stage and like just all these things happening. And then you're like, oh, there are still people behind the scenes doing fucking awesome stuff.
The real work.
That like makes our cell phones work and that makes, you know, every day be a productive day and that bends sort of the arrow of progress in the right direction. That's important. Not just two, but it's more important. And like, thank you for telling those kinds of stories, knowing that they don't always get the most funding. And sometimes you have to do it with a limited crew and a limited budget and be scrappy. Like, you guys aren't, you know, millionaires making movies like this.
Speak for yourself.
But that's, you know, that's I think a misconception that people have a lot of times when they look at Hollywood and they look at glitz and glamour. Oh, but I saw that on a movie. Like an example I often use is that I remember when I got my first electric car, which was a Chevy Spark. And now I've moved on to the Chevy Bolt, which I love, my 100% electric car. And I was shopping around and I made these like charts and graphs comparing all their features, you know, like a nerd would do. And I took it to social media. What car should I get? And it was like, Tesla, get a Tesla. Why don't you get a Tesla? Right, get a Tesla. And I was like, I can't fucking afford a Tesla.
Right.
How do you? And they're like, but you're on TV. But I'm a correspondent on National Geographic.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of people, there's that disconnect when they feel far away from LA.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, I think like for the most part, if you're doing nonfiction storytelling, you're making a middle class living or even below that. Because, I mean, like a lot of times people are pouring their own money into it and doing these passion projects. And I mean, like, they're, you know, like you don't get into documentaries to become rich. You know?
Exactly.
Like, you know, you do it because you love the storytelling.
You care about
it. Yeah. And
I know documentary crew that, you know, do it almost full time who basically don't even have apartments because they're in the field so much.
Totally.
And so they're just living kind of job to job and they've got a storage unit and they, you know, can't remember the last time they slept in a bed that they could call their own.
Road warriors.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, sometimes
that was my dream right there. You just described and, you know, I lived it for a little bit. Then I had a kid.
And you got a wife and a kid. And it's finding that balance is important too. But I get it. I love going in the field. It drives me too.
So fun.
Yeah. It's so fun. Gosh. Okay. So now is the part where I want you to toot your own horn because the movie has been out now for, has it premiered in most major markets?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
like, how's it doing? What is some of the critical feedback that you guys have gotten? Like, I know it's hard to talk about your own projects and be like, it's really good. We won all these awards, but I want to hear about kind of what's on the table and what we're thinking.
Sure. So we were just amazed that we got into Sundance and we thought like, this is the end of the journey and that's great. And we were super excited.
That was the end all be all.
Yeah, we had peaked. And then we won the overall audience award at Sundance.
Incredible.
We won the audience award at South by Southwest. We've been in over 40 film festivals and
Nat Geo bought us.
Yeah, most importantly, that really changed the game.
So was that after you made the film?
Yeah.
Cool. So it was a distribution kind of deal.
Yeah, and that's really changed.
Univision paid for us to make the film.
Okay.
And then they sold it to National Geographic. Mm-hmm. That was always the game plan because Univision didn't really have a future documentary distribution wing.
Yeah, which means that basically Nat Geo buying the film means that so many more eyeballs got on it.
So many more.
Yeah, okay.
And they decided to put it in theaters in dozens of cities across the country and do this huge festival run. And then the thing that really has made me super excited is they've offered it up to schools for free in the month of November.
Oh,
and
cool.
So it's in almost 2,000 schools.
Right now?
Right now.
Oh, that's so cool.
And more, you could sign up.
You can sign up online, scienceforfilm.com.
Any schools to sign up for a free screening.
Really? So if you're public schools?
Any school,
but not like colleges, just primary, secondary?
Just give it a try.
Yeah, exactly.
I think colleges too. Yeah.
That's so cool. So if you're a parent listening and you want your kids to see it, you can sign up. If you're a kid listening, I don't know how big my kid listenership is, but definitely I think the biggest block of listenership of Talk Nerdy is like 18 to 45. It's like right there. So if you're in college, try it, guys. That's really cool.
Or go to scienceforfilm.com, go to host a screening and sign up.
Okay, cool.
But so that's been so exciting. And so we're getting all these tweets from like classrooms and kids who've seen it kids who are like, hashtag Team Robbie, hashtag Team Kashfia. And it's becoming realer and realer. And it's amazing.
The thing is, a lot of kids might not know that they could potentially compete at ISEF, like that they themselves could. I don't think I knew back when because I was heavier into science fair in middle school. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of dropped off for me in high school when I started doing things that are antithetical to being good at your schoolwork. But I had a period there, like we all do. But I think a lot of kids, they're like, oh, that's for the kids that go to the rich schools, or that's for the kid, you know, they just don't see that that's actually available. So being able to bring it into the school and be like, hey, maybe I'll try that next year. Right. What a gift you're giving.
Right. There are 450 qualifying fairs and every like major city or has a qualifying fair. So if you go to high school in the United States, you can qualify for ISEF.
Oh, that's so cool. And so many of the kids that are featured in the film, they really do run the gamut from like very privileged, you know, schools that like are kind of factories for ISEF kids to like these schools that you would never even think.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I love that. Oh, that's so great. Well, gosh, congratulations, you guys. That's amazing. So
thank you so much.
Where can people, we talked about how they can ask for a screening at their school. Mm-hmm. Where can they learn how other ways that they can see the movie?
ScienceFairFilm.com is a great, has it all there.
We're still in some theaters and I think we're going back for a second run in major cities like New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles in a couple of weeks. But then in 2019, we're going to be on National Geographic Channel.
Oh, great.
And streaming platforms.
Oh, that's really cool.
It'll be wider release soon.
So then it'll be everywhere.
ScienceFairFilm.com. That's so great.
And follow us at ScienceFairFilm on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, cool. So you have an Insta and a Twitter for the film at ScienceFairFilm. But what about your personal ones? How can people say hi to you on social personally?
At Xtina Teeny.
I love that.
And at Darren_
Long Island coming
out. Sorry. At Darren_Foster.
Love it. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been so much fun.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Awesome. And everyone listening, thank you for coming back week after week. I'm really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.